everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to the season one finale of How to Write a Joke, a podcast about jokes and the people who write them. I'm your host, Cassidy Kulhanik, and I am a comedian who loves telling jokes and loathes the act of writing them. And that's why every episode I bring on a guest whose joke writing ability I deeply admire, and I do my best to learn a thing or two from them. Well, usually. Today's episode is going to be a little different, though. Today, we're actually going to hear from someone I've known for a very long time, someone who I both fear and admire, someone I am constantly in competition with. Today's guest was voted funniest by their fifth grade class in 2003 and named the third best stand-up comedian in Chicago by the Chicago Reader exactly 20 years later. They have performed on and produced comedy shows across the country, and their comedic stylings range from stand-up to characters to sketch, but only improv when someone is holding a gun to their head. Today's guest also lives at my house, consistently eats all of my food, and even sleeps in my bed? They're my best friend and they're my worst enemy. On today's episode of How to Write a Joke, I'm talking to me. Okay, yeah, it's a little self-serving and masturbatory, but since the entire crux of this show is my desire to learn more and improve my writing habits, I thought it would be fun to see where I'm at, where I've been, and where I feel like I'm going with my writing. Have I learned anything this season? Have I changed any of my behaviors or attitudes towards writing? Have I written a single joke since the beginning of the season? Let's find out! So I got some questions from people who were on the podcast this season. I'm not doing it completely alone. I had a little bit of help from my friends. I'm just going to let them do some of the asking. I have not researched these questions beforehand. I'm going to come into this just as unprepared as I force all of my guests to come in. I'm going to choke on all my words as I'm talking, apparently. But we'll see how this turns out. It should be a fun experiment, hopefully not just for me, hopefully for other people too. And if you hate it, I'm sorry. If you love it, hey, you know, there's something for everyone. So let's see. I know that I have a couple questions from my dear friend Ian Abramson. So I'm going to start with one question from him. Let's see what Ian has to say.
Cassidy, Ian Abramson here. I have three questions for you. You can use one of them or none of them or all of them. Do not use two. What do you do with the initial spark of an idea? For instance, oh, I want to do something about cupcakes. What does your brain like to do next with that impulse?
What do I like to do with the initial spark of an idea? Or what do I do with it? Okay, this is a fun question. I think that when I have an idea kind of pop into my head, the first thing that I do is kind of like a game of word association, right? Like I think about a topic or a subject and then I just bounce it around my head and see what things my head produces. So I think about, like, say I'm thinking about sneakers. I'm going to try and think about what are all the things that I know about sneakers. I know they have laces. I know some of them are leather. Some of them are canvas. I know they have soles. Oh, soles. Now that's interesting. I have a sole, maybe. I could be soleless, and then there are soleless shoes, I guess, but you wouldn't want to wear those. They have insoles. What's the difference between an insole and an outsole for someone who's not a shoe? Do I have an insole and an outsole? Who knows? This is kind of how I develop these things, though, is I try to find something in that game of word association. I try to kind of build a web of ideas that all connect to the thing that sparked the interest or sparked the idea in the first place. And I try to build that web and see what on that web surprises me. And that's the thing that I chase, right? I don't like to try and force something to be funny. I try to find something that already is funny to me. And then my job is convincing other people that it's funny. And that can be a task, I will admit. But I do think that if you allow the funny thing to just naturally emerge, that is where an idea really can thrive. Yeah, that's a great question, Ian. What else do you have for me?
There's always a gap in our brain of what we want to be doing or how good we want to be versus how good we feel something is. Besides the vicious cycle of self-loathing and envisioning your haters pointing out your flaws, how do you take an idea that you know you like and try to make it better?
an idea that I know I like and try to make it better. I'm assuming you are talking, Ian, about an idea that is not necessarily working, in which case, when an idea isn't working, I'm not super precious with most of my comedy ideas. I'm a lot more precious with other creative ideas that I have. I do a lot of visual art and things like that too, and I can be really precious about those things, but I'm really quick to just throw something in the can when I'm writing stand-up. If it doesn't feel good or right, I don't try to make it feel good or right. But if there's something that I really believe in that's not working, I think that there is a process of bringing an idea to life that you kind of have to. I think a lot about there's a very important conceptual artist named John Baldessari, who was a really incredible teacher by all accounts. And one of the things that he would talk about in his teaching is that you have to be like a midwife to your art. So you are not the person creating the art. The art exists and you are helping guide it to reality. You're helping bring it into the world. I think that that is kind of how I think about jokes. I think about them as something that exists outside of me that I am helping bring to life. So when something is not working, I can very honestly see it as a personal failing if it's not working. I can get a little hung up on the fact that it is resonating with me and no one else, and that can be very isolating. It can make me feel bad. It can make me feel pretty lonely. But if I really believe in an idea, I think about it as something that has potential that I can help realize. And sometimes that means trying new things with a joke immediately. Sometimes that means writing new tags. Sometimes that means restructuring or reformatting or rearranging a joke. Sometimes that means adding things like costumes or adding like visual aids, like a PowerPoint or a video, or adding a sound cue or something. Sometimes it needs something that I, like, physically myself am not able to provide. Sometimes it needs to just be in a different space. So it's kind of a puzzle, right? And my job becomes solving that puzzle. And so if I really believe in an idea and it's not working, I'm going to keep trying it until I feel like I cannot solve the puzzle, in which case I will shelve it. I got really great advice in art school from one of my teachers who told me that there's no use forcing an idea onto paper when you can just put it on the shelf and let your brain solve it for you over time. So, you know, you're always kind of subconsciously thinking about things. I have jokes that I wrote years ago that sometimes I will randomly, you know, months or years later, I will have a solution to the joke's problem that I could not solve before. So sometimes the answer is, you know, tinkering, but sometimes the answer is just time. And I know that Ian had one more question, so let's see what else Ian has to say.
Lastly, I admire your discipline and organization very much. What do you think you have a knack for in this area that many comics struggle with? In addition, what do you do when you realize the plans that you've organized have started to get away from you? Okay, that's it.
Okay. First of all, thank you. Very kind of you to say that I'm organized. I hear that a lot, and I don't feel like an organized person, but maybe you guys are just so unorganized that I look organized. I'm crazy right now. I'm saying things that aren't true. I have so many spreadsheets you guys wouldn't believe. I think, though, that something that I have a knack for that I think that other comics don't have a knack for doesn't really have to do a lot with my organizational skills, to be honest. And I think that that has a lot to do with why I produce a lot of shows, and I think that that's where my organizational skills come in handy. But I think that something that benefits me over a lot of other comics is that I went to art school, and that means two things. It means that I was trained by professionals to think about things in ways that are not usual, to think outside of the box constantly, to ask questions that are uncomfortable to ask, to subvert expectations, to, you know, create things that are new or that are intentionally playing with the old. Like, I think that art school taught me a lot about how to analyze and how to fashion new ideas into reality. But I think that the thing that really benefited me from going to art school was that I was forced to sit through critique every single week. So that means that every single week, you know, 10 to 15 people who I really looked up to, who I really admired, who I loved working with, would come into a room and would look at the most vulnerable art that I had ever made in my life, and they would just rip it to shreds. And I hated it. I hated every minute of critique. And I will admit that I was mean in critique. I think everyone's a little mean in critique. But I think that the experience of sitting through it really helped me kind of form an identity in my ability to take criticism and to analyze things and be kind of externally aware of the things that I'm making. So I'm kind of always thinking ahead to how other people are going to interpret what I'm saying on stage. And so when people don't laugh at my jokes, it really kind of shocks me to my core sometimes. I know that sounds awful to say. I'm so sorry. That sounds so cocky. But it can come as a really big shock when I think that people are really going to like something and then it falls flat, because I don't like to put out material, art or comedy, that I think that people will not like or that won't resonate with people. And so when that does happen, oh boy, it feels like getting the wind taken out of my sails for sure. When my plans are going awry, though, oh boy, when I feel like my plans are going awry, I guess I'm not entirely sure what plans means here. But when it comes to, like, if I'm planning on a set going well or a joke going well or something, if I'm planning on things going well, it doesn't usually go well. I think that planning is kind of activating like an opposite day trap for yourself, where you think that you're going to do really great, you're going to get a great tape, but then you watch it back later and you're the only person in the room laughing. When my plans start to go awry, I get frustrated. I'm human. I get frustrated and I get upset, and I take it really hard sometimes, but I try my best to go home and to remember that there was a reason why I had those plans in the first place, and focus on that and get back to the task of achieving that goal. Thank you so much, Ian. I know that Maggie Winters also sent in a question for me. Let's see what Maggie has to say.
Hi, Cassidy. For your writing process, where do you think you draw the most inspiration from?
So for my writing process, in a day-to-day sense for my stand-up, I think that I draw a lot of inspiration from the world around me, but not in a way that is kind of, there are some comics who are really good at kind of like regurgitating the events of their days. Like, they can just go on stage and talk about things that happened to them. And that is not a skill that I possess. But I do still draw influence and inspiration from the world around me. And so I write a lot about my family, for starters. I had an insane home life as a kid. I write about that. I write about my dog. I write about, you know, I write about very silly things that occur to me. I have a joke about, I have a joke of, sorry, my dad listens to the podcast, so I'm sorry I'm going to talk about this, but I have a joke about my vibrator and how I want to learn Morse code to communicate with it. And the reason that I came up with that joke was because I was using my vibrator and I realized that the pattern that it was buzzing to sounded like Morse code. And that was as simple as it was to write that joke. But when it comes down to like my broader inspirations or influences on my comedy, the two people who have influenced me the most or inspired me the most have been Chelsea Peretti, who her special One of the Greats is, in my opinion, a masterpiece. It's such an incredible piece of comedy. It's so subversive and silly and fun, and it's such a middle finger to this industry that's dominated by just so much machismo and so people who are so set in their ways of what comedy should be, and she just undoes all of that. And unfortunately, that special is damn near impossible to find anywhere. It's very hard to find. But if you can find it, please watch it. Let me know what you think, because it has influenced me more than any other work of comedy, I think. And then another person who has been a huge inspiration for me is Stuart Lee. And he is another comedian who, he is not afraid to experiment. He is not afraid to explore the boundaries of the medium to see how far he can take something. But he's not offensive in that way. He's just very playful, and he's sarcastic, but he's not bitter. He's brilliant, but he's also able to speak to an audience in a way that him being an actual genius, like an actual level of intelligence genius, he's able to speak to any audience and not lose them. I mean, he is so good at bringing very big ideas down to a very basic level so that anyone can access them. And the fact that he's able to do that while also performing essentially high art, performance art on stage, he's incredible. Another one that you should definitely look up if you haven't already. And very funny that I just got to talk about Chelsea Peretti, because now I'm going to take a question from a friend of hers. Let's see what Niles has to say.
Hey, Cassidy. It's Niles Abstin, longtime listener, first time caller on the podcast. I had a question about your writing. You're like really silly with your bits. Do you ever think when you're writing, like, this act out or this character or this bit might be a little too weird? And when you do have feelings like that, how do you change it up, or do you change it up, or do you just not care? It's like, you got to go try it anyway. I'd like to know.
I love that Niles calls me out for being silly. That's actually a really big insecurity of mine, is that I'm too serious all the time. And so it feels really nice to hear that someone thinks I'm silly. Thank you. I love being silly on stage. And I think it's because I am a really serious person off stage. Being silly on stage is so freeing. And I know that if you've never done comedy before, maybe the idea of getting on stage and acting like a total fool in front of dozens of people or hundreds of people or thousands of people, not me, but others. if you think about that and you've never done it before, maybe that sounds terrifying, but actually it's really freeing, because I feel like on stage, I am in charge. And if I'm leading the way, I want to take us on the most absurd path possible. I mean, I just did a half hour, and for the entirety of my half hour, I was wearing a nude suit with a giant curly wig sewn onto the front of it for my huge bush. And I felt ridiculous the whole time I was doing it, but I did it. And I feel so happy about the fact that I did it, because I know that people in that room left that night and were like, what the hell did I just see? And that is way more memorable for comedy than leaving a show where you just mildly laughed for an hour and 15 minutes. I would much rather, even if people aren't laughing, I would much rather do the ridiculous thing that's going to stick with them than I would like to do standard traditional stand-up that even if it's really good, it's more than likely going to go in one ear and out the other for those people as soon as they leave the building, right? And so I do feel fear. I do feel shame. I do feel those things. I feel afraid and nervous about trying silly bits. But I also think that the sillier a bit is, the more confident I feel in performing it, because and maybe you can tell by the fact that I'm doing a podcast by myself right now, but I do a lot of the things that I do for me and not for other people. And so I like to be ridiculous and silly. And if other people can't get on board with that, to me, that's their problem. So I'm not going to be afraid to go be silly. I'm going to get up on stage and do the thing that brings me the most joy. And I hope that people laugh. I hope that people enjoy it. I hope that they love it. But I know that they'll remember it. And so, yeah, I do get nervous, Niles, about being silly on stage, but I think that the nervousness is always superseded by the knowledge that I have the freedom to be as goofy as I want to be for, you know, the length of my set, for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, or whatever. I get to be as silly as I want to be. And anyone who is there, that's what they are there for. That's what they came for. That's what they came to see. They paid to be there. And if I'm the person they are there to see, then they are going to sit through what I'm doing, right? And so why should I censor myself? Why should this isn't an idea that I had before talking to Adisa on the show, but Adisa had great advice about never saying no to yourself. And I've really held on to that since she said that to me. And it's given me a lot of bravery and strength in this way. And I think that if I want to be silly, then damn it, I'm going to be silly. And that's all there is to it, really. Yeah, I hope that answered your question, Niles. I know that Dia sent me a question too. What do you have to say, Dia?
Hey, Cass. My question for you is, what do you do when you suddenly get an idea that you get really excited about? You think this must be your next bit, and you can almost hear it in your head being performed and working. But every time you try and get it out of your head, like either write it down on a page or work it on stage, it always comes out flat. Like, it never quite feels like what's in your head. What do you do with the idea then? Hopefully that made sense.
That made total sense. I think I have maybe touched on this a little bit already, but when an idea is falling flat and I really want to make it work, like I said earlier, I will try different things with it for a little while. I'll experiment with it. I'll rearrange it. I'll say things in different ways. I'll perform it differently, or I'll add different, you know, different things to it, or I'll shelve it, or I'll scrap it. But what I do internally is that I think about that idea, and initially I will admit that I get bummed out. I get bummed out that it's not working, and I get frustrated that it's not working, and I wonder why it's not working. But sometimes, no matter what I do, a bit just does not work. And when that is the case, and I love the bit but no one else does, then at the end of the day, I've just given myself a gift that no one else can enjoy, right? Because then that's just a joke for me. And I think it's okay sometimes to have things that are just for you. And if I tell a joke on stage that I think is funny and no one else does, I'll say that. Other comedians might hate that I do it, but I'll just be like, you know what? That one was for mommy. I've never called myself mommy before. That was a cry for help. speaking of mommies, oh, weird transition. I'm so sorry. I do have a question from a certified mother. I'm getting weirder as I go. Let's see what the incredible Kristen Toomey has to ask.
Hey, do you ever, when you're writing or when you think of an idea, do you ever sort of bring it up in conversation with people just to kind of feel, get feelers out on it without letting them know that you're working on a joke? I do.
Oh, I love that. Do I ever run bits on people? Oh, you know what? I'm going to answer this question. And I know one person in my life who is going to say, yes, you do. I really don't run bits on people. And I am so conscious of that. I'm so conscious of other people running bits on me. And it always makes me roll my eyes unless they come out and say, hey, I need to test some material. That's totally fine. But if you're talking to me like we're having an organic conversation and you can't stop making bits, first of all, I will probably call you out on it because it makes me uncomfortable. And if I have to be uncomfortable, then so do you. But second of all, it's just like I'm a human being. You're a human being. Talk to me like we're human beings. Don't just run jokes on me, right? But I try really hard not to run jokes on people. Sometimes things that I have said to people will become jokes later on. And then I do feel a little flush of embarrassment or like potential shame over the idea that the person I was talking to could hear that joke on stage and go, hey, that was supposed to be a conversation between us, two friends that respect each other and don't take our conversations as material. But I am so sorry to my wonderful partner who has to put up with me running bits on him all the time, actually. And I think it's because I trust him the most, right? I trust him more than other people, and I trust that I'm not being a burden on him by doing so. And I also trust that he will tell me if I am being a burden by doing so. I really don't like to run bits on people, but it is so funny to hear that Kristen does because she's a master. Maybe I should be doing it because if she's doing it, she's clearly doing something right. I have a couple more questions to go through. Let's see. Coming up next, we have Andrew Nadeau, good friend of the pod. What do you have to say, Andrew?
So I know there's a lot of advice for getting past writer's block. But what do you do to avoid spiraling while you have writer's block?
Ooh, okay. So I will be, if I'm being completely honest, I am not very good at avoiding it. I spiral all the time. I am so bad about falling down a pit of despair when things are not going right. But over the last couple of years, one thing that I have gotten really good about and one thing that has helped me a lot is thinking about the creative process like a crop rotation. And this is an idea that I got from Joni Mitchell. But she said that if you think about creativity like a crop rotation, you can't plant the same seeds every season, right? You have to rotate to be able to get those seeds to grow to their most, you know, full and bountiful harvest. And so what that means is that I can't write stand-up all the time. I can write stand-up some of the time, but I can't write stand-up all of the time. And when I can't write stand-up, that's when I know that it's time to turn my creative energy to a different outlet. And I am someone who practices a lot of different creative outlets. I come from a visual arts background, like I said. I also play guitar, and I do other forms of writing. I write short stories. I write poetry. I write scripts and things like that. I try to have a lot of different creative outlets at my disposal at all times for this reason. And I think that learning to do that, learning to turn my gaze towards another project in a separate field, has helped me immensely in my battle against writer's block and against creative blocks in general. I think that it has helped me get better at all of the different things that I'm practicing because I'm not wasting time trying to brute force an idea to come to life. I'm letting things kind of naturally and organically bubble up. But it also forces me to kind of more often than I would practice all of these different things. And so, yeah, I think that when I heard Joni Mitchell say the thing about treating creativity like a crop rotation, a real light bulb went off in my head and it completely revolutionized my approach to creative processes. And I hope that someone out there listening will also find that advice helpful because it has truly changed my life. And I've got just one question left from my dear friend, Adisa Williams. Adisa, what do you have?
Has there ever been an idea that you had in the back of your mind that you weren't able to like make into an idea right away? How did you approach that? Did you revisit it years later? Have you still not been able to crack it? How do you deal with those ideas that you just can't crack?
Yeah, so I think this goes back to that idea of like shelving things when they're not working. And I'm really quick to do that because I really don't like when creativity feels like work, then that's when I feel like it's not working, right? Like I think that doing creative things should be fun, or at least for me, that's how I feel about creativity. And so when it's not fun, when it's work, that's when I tend to avoid it or put it aside or, you know, not want to do it. I can't tell you how many times I've gone home and said, I am quitting stand-up, and I might. But I really do think that there is something really important about letting an idea percolate in the back of your mind and not sitting there forcing it at the front of your mind forever. I think that you can let ideas develop over time. And yeah, it takes a long time sometimes. Sometimes it only takes like a day or two. But I have a joke that I've been sitting on for like a year, maybe more, that I think is really funny, but I have had a hard time finding ways to make it work yet. But I believe in it. So I'm not scrapping it yet. The idea comes from when I was a kid, my mom's side of the family burned down our house for the insurance money, right? Which is an insane thing. And most of those people are no longer living, so it doesn't really matter for me to talk about it. But I think about that. I think about the absurdity of it. And I think about how funny and fucking weird it is that people do things like that, and I want to make it into a joke so badly. I tried by the way that I approached it the first time that I tried to run it as a series of jokes was that I structured it by saying that I started by saying a candle is like a pet flame, and then I talked about my dog for a little bit, and then I talked about how my family burned that house down, and the way that they did it was they left a candle by a curtain, and then they got an insurance payout, but my dog's never gotten me an insurance payout, so who's the real pet? It's obviously, I wouldn't deliver it like that on stage. There's more to it. There's more finesse to it, and more words and more blah blah blah. But I think that is such a funny idea because it's a personal experience that affected me in such a radical and weird way. And I know that it has an undertone that's very dark. And I think that a lot of my material actually does have that undertone. I talk about my experiences with assault. I talk about my experiences like with being abused by my mother as a child. I talk about all these things that have dark undertones and difficult to broach. I forgot a word on air. Ugh, me. But anyway, I think that there is a way to take those dark things, that dark subject matter, that uncomfortable subject matter, and bridge the gap between something being absurdly negative and absurdly positive, like something being absurd in a way that is offensive and dark and upsetting. But that absurdity also lends itself to something being ridiculous and silly. And how could someone think that this was a good idea? I mean, honestly, like, burning your house down for the insurance money and then not even really getting an insurance payout? That is slapstick, basically. Like, that's such classical comedy. And I haven't found the way to make it work yet. And I'm not trying to hash it out on the air right now. I'm just talking about it because it was the first example that came to mind. But I think that, like I was saying, I think that it will eventually get there. But all I can do is poke and prod at it over time, but let it kind of simmer in the back of my mind until I have that answer. Wow. I hope I answered that question. Now, I said at the top of the show, I asked a couple questions. I asked, you know, where I've been, where am I going? Have I learned anything? And I think that I've covered a little bit of that. But I do want to say, I want to say a few words about the show and what it has, like, how it has affected my writing process. I have been writing more since I started the show. I will proudly say that to you guys. We have accomplished our goal of getting me to sit down and write. I hope you're all clapping at home or in your car or at the gym, wherever you are, because I really was not writing for like months before recording this podcast. And just sitting here talking to people who I cannot tell you how much I respect all of the people that I had on the show this season. And to be able to sit down and talk to them has been so inspiring and so energizing that it has made me not just want to, but feel totally driven to sit down and just actually put words on paper. And they're not all great. I mean, I'm working on a couple different jokes that I have written in the past couple of weeks. I can share some of them. Like, I'm trying to write this joke right now. I think it's really funny that you guys are going to hate this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think it's really funny that the Nation of Islam and Hebrew nationals are not at all the same kind of thing, because they sound like they would be, right? But no, the Nation of Islam is a religious and political movement aimed at freeing people of color from the shackles of white supremacy, and Hebrew nationals are all beef hot dogs. And either way, my grandpa does not like them. Yeah, that's that's where I'm at. I'm working on it. Who knows? Both my grandpas are dead. So sorry, Dad, if that's weird for me to say that in front of you. God, why do I keep talking to my dad on this podcast? Now I'm going to have to go to therapy. I've written other jokes. I've written silly bits. I've written jokes about doing an impression of myself after having accidentally wandered into a dental hygienist convention and not wanting to draw attention to myself, in which case I would just say, boy, I sure do love replacing my toothbrush every 2 to 3 months. You know, things like that. They're not all winners, but they're something. I'm at least writing, and that's more than I could say before I started the show. So yeah, I think that this has been immensely helpful. I think I have learned things, and I think that I'm only going to continue to learn more and more as we continue doing the show, and we will continue doing the show, don't worry. But yeah, I'm not gonna do the writing exercise today, because I think that it would be a little silly to do on my own, because the fun of it is collaboration, right? And so I'm gonna skip that part today. But before I do my usual wrap up, I do want to take a second to say, truly, sincerely, and from the bottom of my heart, listeners, it means the absolute world to me that you're here. When I started this podcast, I told myself over and over again, if even just one person listens, it's worth it. I'm really happy to say that it turns out this little project has been very worth it. I've learned so much from my guests, but I've also heard from some of you folks out there too. And you've reached out and you've told me your thoughts on different episodes. You've offered me advice. You've let me know what is working and what isn't. This started as a pretty personal endeavor, but it really feels like it's become a community effort. And how beautiful is it that we get to work on this together? Please keep reaching out, leaving reviews, letting me know how we can make this thing better, and I'll keep doing my best to learn and to bring you guys the most fun exploration of the creative process that I possibly can. If you're listening to this, I want you to know that I really appreciate you sharing your time with me. Thank you so much. Now, thank you to Ian Abramson, Maggie Winters, Niles Abston, Dia Bazrai, Kristen Toomey, and Andrew Nadeau and Adisa Williams for sending in questions for today's episode. If you thought that I sounded interesting, try following me. I'm on all socials at Heavenly Grandpa. This is the final episode of season one of How to Write a Joke, and season two will be coming in a few months, so please follow us on Instagram at How to Write a Joke to keep up with updates and announcements, and follow us on your podcast app of choice so that new episodes are ready to go for you as soon as they drop. A huge thanks to Michael Salas-Holtzman for creating the music for the podcast. Another huge thanks to John O'Neill for editing the podcast. And the biggest thanks of all for the Lincoln Lodge, the biggest thanks of all to the Lincoln Lodge in Chicago, Illinois, the heart of the Chicago comedy scene, where this podcast is produced and recorded. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next season. How to write a joke.